Welcome to the Land Use, Transportation, and Infrastructure Committee meeting of Denver City Council. Full coverage of this session of the Land Use, Transportation, and Infrastructure Committee begins now.
Good afternoon. This is Tuesday, June 10th. You are at the Land Use, Transportation, and Infrastructure Committee meeting here in Denver. If you're sitting at home watching this, continue watching the Ludi meeting, but after the meeting ends, get outside. It is so nice. It's a beautiful day in Denver. And after that advertisement, I wanted to turn it over to our other council members. We have two action items. One, that's a public testimony. We have four folks sign up to speak. But before we jump into our presentation and action items, we'll have introductions from council members starting on my right.
Thank you for the weather report.
Hello,
Diana Romero Campbell, Southeast Denver, District 4.
Yeah. And I just want to make it clear, we are giving you permission to just leave. Don't bother asking your boss. Just go.
Don't leave.
Chris Hines, Denver's Perfect 10.
Good afternoon, Paul Cashman, South Denver, District 6.
See you next. Sarah Harry, one of your council members at large.
Jamie Torres, West Denver, District 3.
Thank you all for being here. Thank you for the folks who have joined us. I think we can do a slow pause. We have another council member that's coming in. No, you are perfectly fine. You are right on time. We'll turn over to you for introduction.
Amanda Sawyer, District 5.
Thank you so much for all being here. Thank you everyone who is in the audience participating. We have first action item is a rezoning of 4235 North Columbine Street. A good friend Rob from Community Planning and Development has a presentation. I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you very much. My name is Rob Haig. I'm Senior City Planner with Community Planning and Development, and today I will be giving a quick overview of the rezoning request. Located at the addresses 4235 North Columbine Street and 2535 East 40th Avenue. So in this presentation, first we'll take a look at the request, followed by the location and context of the property, then the rezoning process and a review of where we are within that process, and finally, a quick overview of the review criteria. So this slide shows the subject property within its surrounding context. The image on the left, again, shows that property highlighted in red. So the subject property actually contains two parcels and a portion of right-of-way that is being vacated on Columbine Street. You can see it's just north at this north and west of this S-curve in the commuter rail and just south of the heavy rail and immediately east of Josephine Street. So now to look at the location and context. Subject property is located within Council District 9 in the Elyria-Swansea Statistical Neighborhood. This slide shows the zoning on the subject property in the surrounding area. So it's a little hard to see because the purples are pretty similar in color, but the majority of the property is zoned IB, which is our general industrial zone district. The portion of the property to the east of Columbine Street, that kind of triangle up in the north northeast portion of the property, is zoned IA. If you look at the surrounding zoning, again, it's mostly this IA and IB in these purple tones, the IMX immediately to the east across the commuter rail, and then if you extend further to the east and north, there are some residential districts in that yellow and straw color. The York Street Yards property is this IMX area just south and is an often recognized landmark. So the proposed zoning is IMX3, which is an industrial mixed-use three-story zone district. These are zone districts described as being within predominantly industrially dominated areas that provide this transition from heavier, generally industrial uses to other mixed-use zone districts. Looking at the building forms allowed in the IMX3 zone district are townhouse, general, and industrial building forms. If there are any questions about those, this time, following some stumbling around during the last meeting, I have the zoning code up here. Happy to answer any questions about these forms, setbacks, and so forth. Looking at the existing context and land use, subject property is predominantly vacant. There are a fair number of vehicles on this property and old tractor trailers. The property was most recently used according to our records, as a driving school for larger truck drivers. You can see the surrounding area is, again, predominantly industrial, but then as you extend further north and east, there are more single and multi two-unit zone districts, or zoning uses, excuse me. Not zoning uses, just uses. The proximity railroad, the site is adjacent to heavy rail just to the north, and the commuter rail that kind of snakes along this in this S curve to the south and east of the property. The applicant did provide a rail safety analysis as part of their application, which is included in your packet. This slide shows some images of the surrounding area. Again, just to the east and south of this curve is the subject property here. And then the photo in the bottom left shows the property, again, kind of highlighting the previous use. You can just see there's some tractor trailers on the property that were used for that training and driver school use. Now to look at the rezoning process. This application was originally submitted in October of last year for an IMX-5 zone district. After some discussions with staff and the community, the applicant has now revised their application and resubmitted in March of 2025, and that is the current application under review. This is for the IMX-3 zone district. Planning board, or all of the informational notices were sent and posted on site in accordance with our new requirements at that informational notice stage, and again at planning board notice for that public hearing, which was held on May 21st of this year. Planning board is forwarding an unanimous recommendation of approval, and if forwarded by this committee, the City Council public hearing is tentatively scheduled for July 28th of this year. So far, this slide summarizes the received letters in support and opposition of the rezoning. The Cole Neighborhood Association, Denver North Business Association, Clayton United RNO, and United Community Action Network all provided letters of support, which are included in the application packet. We have not received any RNO letters in opposition or any position statements. Additionally, staff received one public comment in support of the application during the referral period. Now to review the rezoning review criteria. There are three review criteria used in evaluating rezoning requests. I'll move through these fairly quickly, knowing that the full committee will weigh the merits of the case during the public hearing. However, I'm happy to go back to any of these slides to answer any questions about these criteria. So the consistency with adopted plans is the first. There are three applicable adopted plans on the subject property. First are the two citywide plans, being Comprehensive Plan 2040 and Blueprint Denver. And then there is also the Elyria and Swansea neighborhoods plan, which is the applicable neighborhood plan at this location. So first, the proposal is found to support goals in Comprehensive Plan 2040 that promote an equitable, affordable, and inclusive city, an environmentally resilient Denver, and strong and authentic neighborhoods. There are more details included in the staff report for all of these policies included in these three slides. To move on to Blueprint Denver, staff finds that the proposal is consistent with the future neighborhood context at this location, which is special district. The IMX-3 zone district proposed is a district context and is therefore consistent with this guidance. Additionally, the proposal is found to be consistent with the Innovation Flex Future Place type, which is described as these areas that include a range of uses, including residential uses in predominantly or sometimes predominantly industrial areas. And the growth area strategy at this location is also a special district where we anticipate seeing 15% of new jobs and 5% of new housing growth across the city. Additionally, the proposal is within an area identified as a NEST priority area or priority neighborhood, and therefore staff completed and the applicant did respond to the equity analysis which takes a look at the three major equity concepts in Blueprint Denver. We'll review each one of these quickly. First is the access to opportunity, where the property scored a 3.2 out of 5. This includes access to transit, open spaces, schools, and other mixed-use centers. The property is in within an area that scores high in the vulnerability to involuntary displacement. These three metrics again all scored high in the vulnerability to that displacement. The property is within an area that has a 3 out of 5 score for housing diversity. And the application also does address climate concerns through allowing some of these additional uses, including multi-unit housing along this transit corridor, and allowing potential mixed-use multi-unit buildings that are more energy efficient than lower density residential, again, in close proximity to 39th Avenue Greenway, York Street Yards development, and the transit line that runs south of the property. In addition to the citywide guidance, the proposal is within the area applicable to the Elyria and Swansea neighborhoods plan. This plan identifies the subject property within an industrial mixed use future concept land use with a 3-story maximum height. So staff finds that the proposal is also consistent with this guidance and that the IMX3 zone district is an industrial mixed use zone district with a maximum height of 3 stories. Staff also finds that the proposal is consistent with the and it advances the public interest, primarily in that it advances goals, policies, and strategies in our adopted plans, which are adopted in order to further the public interest, and that the proposal is consistent with the neighborhood context, zone district purpose, and intent statements in the Denver Zoning Code. That concludes staff's presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and the applicant is here as well.
Thank you so much, Rob, for the presentation. We're looking for council members to join the queue. Right now, we have Councilmember Torres in the queue.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Rob. Mm-hmm. Two questions. The alley that seems to run in between the large and the small little triangle,
yes.
Is that city-owned right-of-way?
That is a right-of-way, and there is a vacation underway. I would point to the applicant to give a better description of where exactly they are in that vacation process, but there is an application under review.
Sure, yeah, if there's any additional information.
Good afternoon, council members. Peter Wall here on behalf of the applicant. The vacation's actually been completed.
So what happens with the rail portion of that alleyway?
The rail portion is actually to the north of it, so we're only vacating the portion to the south,
okay,
which links up that small little triangular piece to the rest of the kind of the boot-shaped property.
Got it. Okay. So the south of the rail line is what you're making?
Yeah, correct.
That leads to that little cul-de-sac?
Right there.
Oh, right there. Yes. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
And then what's south of the A line did not get vacated.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's, sorry, just to the north. When I say rail lines, that's a problem when there's two rail lines here.
Yeah.
We have a Union Pacific rail
NRTV.
Line, so that's the one that I was talking about.
Okay.
So the portion that's to the south of the UP rail line is vacated.
Got it.
And then the portion that's to the north vacated. Everything that's to the south of the A line is not vacated.
South of A line, north of. Okay, thank you for that. Peter, just another quick question. The rail study is in your application. What did it... Is there any influence on the project that you ended up getting from that rail study?
What do you mean?
Is there anything in the study that is influencing what you're planning to build on the property?
No, I mean, I think we ultimately just wanted to make sure we did the rail study to have an idea of if there were going to be improvements if you're going to do a mixed-use project. What improvements can be done to make sure it's really safe for residents. Mm-hmm. So I think the big takeaway, Steve Truitt's our rail expert. He's had 40 years as a rail expert. the big takeaway for him was on the Union Pacific rail line that's to the north, right now there's no fencing right there. So there's good fencing on the border of the property that borders the A line to the RTD line. So we want to mirror that and basically put a fence in the border of that property so no one's wandering into those tracks to the north.
Got it.
And then we're just going to be thoughtful about this is probably going to be a development that's surface parked. And if you put that surface parking to the north and then to the east, that's bordering the rail lines, that provides nice buffering of pretty much like 100 feet or over. So we're going to incorporate that into the design as well.
Okay. So your access points into the property will still be Josephine?
Correct. Two access points off Josephine is what we're anticipating.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councilmember Torres. Councilmember Hines.
Thank you, Committee Chair. Thank you, Council Torres, for bringing up the rail study. Just to put it out there, because the public might not be fully aware, there was a Councilmember Ortega did a lot of work on safety around rail lines, particularly as the Center City, sorry, not the Center City, as Denver, some in the Center City continues to densify and put in construction, particularly housing around rail lines, considering the number of trains or vehicles, what are the train cars or trains themselves derail, or we've had explosions of hazardous materials in the past due to things moving along the rail line. And so the idea is we just want to be cautious and make sure that the public is safe. Putting a buffer of a parking lot of 100 feet is better than some other developments have done, particularly recently, particularly also in the fine District 9, you know, up in Rhino. So thank you for bringing it up. Thank you for considering the study. We certainly want every Denver resident to be safe. So thank you, Committee Chair.
Thank you, Councilmember Hines. Councilmember Parody.
Oh, there I am. So I'm just orienting myself to where this property is. I actually can physically picture it now, like from my memory. It is definitely really surrounded by just industrial uses right now, and I know there's been conversation in this part of the city about like maintaining some of that purely industrial zoning because of jobs and things like this. And so when I see a parcel that's like in a bubble of pure industrial, I wonder about making it mixed use, and just the like, it's hard for me to picture housing going in right there in some ways, I guess. So yeah, if you could you talk to me a little more about what's planned for it.
Yeah, if you, is it possible to pull up the map again, Rob?
Is this the Carter Cutler? Okay. Or was right there?
Formerly.
Yeah,
the biggest change that you'll see in the area, so that IMX3 site that's to the east, that's the old AT&T site as it's commonly referred to, that is, that's going to be housing.
Okay.
So that's been a really, in terms of changing conditions in the neighborhood, there was another map that showed it as industrial, which was a previous institutional use, but there are plans, I think they just completed, we've been in contact with them, they just went through the LDR process, and that's going to be a predominantly residential project.
Okay, that's helpful. I think that's all I can ask at this moment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then I guess my only, I'm sorry not to overspeak here, but Rob, I don't know if you pointed this out in your presentation. There's areas in the city, I'm gonna butcher this, but it's a protected kind of manufacturing zone.
Yeah.
This is not one of those areas.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Parody. Any other questions? I have a quick question for the applicant on their public interest community outreach. This is an Elyria Swansea. I see responses from all of the other communities surrounding that are impacted. Can you share a little bit of what your community outreach process was to each of the communities? And if you can maybe share a little bit of what your outreach was to Elyria Swansea.
You bet. So we reached out to all the RNOs in the area, and there were lots of them. So we have support letters from four of them, as Rob mentioned. We had an early meeting. We've been working on this proposal for a while, and we've changed from IMX5 to IMX3, as Rob mentioned, a large part, honestly, to a lot of our conversations with the GES Coalition. So we had an initial meeting with them back in 2024, kept reaching out to them to update them on the process. And then most recently in April 2025, we reached back out to let them know we were going to go from 5 to 3. I think the most important piece of feedback we heard was not the Elyria Swansea plan. Height guidance talks about 3 stories maximum.
Right.
And the concern was if we push to 5, are we going to set a precedent for other properties? So we took that to heart. It was one of the biggest reasons we changed from 5 to 3 in the plan.
And I want to say I appreciate that change, because that is specifically based on that adopted plan that requests 3. So I appreciate that, Peter.
Yeah.
Council President Pro Tem Romero Campbell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, Peter, one more question. just a real quick question. So if it goes to three, if there were height incentives for affordability, do you imagine that this would be, is this planned to be an affordable development? And with three, could they go to five?
So if we, if you all end up approving the IMX3 zoning, through EHA, we can only bump up to one story. So at maximum height, we could be four story here. And then we'd have to do the additional height incentives. They're part of EHA. So you have to build more affordable housing in order to achieve that four story in height.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have one clarifying question for community planning and development. I'm looking at approximately, I know exactly where this property is at. Mm-hmm. I know I had a discussion on another property that abutted a railroad track. And there were some other steps, I don't know if it was at a POC or whomever, a validation for sidewalks going towards railroad lines. Does anyone know what I'm talking about from CPD, that they had to get some level of sign off, whether it was CPD or DOTI, because there's this sidewalk on the view from the view of the property to the north, looking northwest from North Josephine Street. I know that's not exactly where the property is at, but that sidewalk, I think, is a continuation. Was there any steps or any discussion on any impacts to creating infrastructure like sidewalks or right-of-way that leads towards the tracks if there's additional protection along that track that's necessary?
That's a great question, and I'm not sure I can answer that. I know that those are things in more detail that are addressed during the site development planning yeah. phase once they have a proposal of what they're actually going to build. And that would be the only answer I could give, is that it would be kind of further along in the development process.
And you're correct, Rob. I shouldn't have even asked, because it's during the site development plan process is when that has come up mm-hmm. previously on sites near here. So I have no further questions. Looking around the room to see if there are additional questions from council members. This is an action item for council members that are on the Luddy Committee. Do we have approval to move this to the floor? I see thumbs up. It looks like we have them all. Thank you so much, Rob. Great presentation. Look forward to seeing the team on the floor.
Second.
Oh, do we have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Thumbs up. Call this Daryl's Rules of Order. It was Cashman was second. Yes.
Is this when we all leave and go outside?
No.
Oh.
So we're good, Rob. I appreciate right. you.
Yeah, thank you.
We can thanks do committee much. Outside.
We yes, we can do a committee outside. I'm all for it. I don't know if Channel 8 is ready for that.
Yeah.
We're transitioning to 250854, an ordinance amending article.
Nine
of chapter 10.
You had to reboot.
Regarding neglected, I'm trying to find my notes there. Neglected and derelict properties. We have council members Sawyer, Torres, and Cashman. There is a public hearing. We have four folks, I believe, signed up for public comment. Once the presentation concludes, we'll ask each of the individuals who are signed up for public comment, if they're in person, to come and stand right there by that mic and speak, and I'll call your name out. If you're virtual, I'll receive some support from Ann and the team to make sure we promote you to speak. So we'll turn it over to, it looks like, the amazing three from Sawyer, Torres, and Cashman's office.
Good afternoon, council members. My name is Masha Lior, and I am with Councilman Cashman's office in District 6. I'm a senior council aide.
And hi, council members. Ian Slavis, senior council aide to Councilwoman Torres.
Hey, everyone. Oh, I'm sorry. Hey, everyone. Owen Brigner, senior council aide to Councilwoman Sawyer, District 5.
All right, and as mentioned, we're here to talk about neglected and derelict buildings and some of our proposed ordinance changes. So here's just a quick agenda for today. We'll go over the introduction and overview pretty quickly, deep dive into the proposed legislative changes, and then talk about next steps. So here's just a quick overview of the work we've accomplished so far. Some of what you'll hear today is familiar to you, since we've come to present at Budget and Policy Committee twice now. The first time was on July 22nd in 2024, where we mostly talked about the problem that we're facing and our initial policy proposals. And since then, our council offices convened a monthly working group, which included a number of agencies involved in neglect and derelict buildings. And as of February 2025, this working group has kind of transformed into an interagency task force led by community planning and development. And we've seen already since February a lot of the breakdown of the silos that were one of the problems that we saw. The co-sponsors of this bill presented an update at Budget and Policy Committee in March of this year, and now we're excited to be coming to you all today with actual legislative language changes.
So this map highlights the locations of NADB properties across Denver. As of April, there were 285 properties currently in the list. There could be more that just aren't reported. While the majority of NADB properties are single-family homes, the list also includes commercial properties as well as 40 historic properties. Every council district in Denver has NADB properties. However, we see a higher concentration in specific districts. District 3 currently holds the largest, followed by District 9, then District 7, and District 1. The number of the properties of the list increased significantly in 2024, but that was mainly due to James Hicks coming into his current role and the operational improvements that CPD was able to implement. As a reminder, there were no show cause hearings from 2018 to 2024 due to the pandemic, staffing shortages, and limited resources. So the problem, NADB properties are a significant burden on city resources and public health and safety, from 911 calls to 311 calls to calls to council districts. People are breaking into these properties, starting fires, and attracting crime. The current ordinance has not been updated since 2012, which means our approach may not reflect our current needs and challenges. And as mentioned, CPD has faced staffing and resource challenges. These properties also contribute to the growing shortage of housing and businesses throughout the city and directly impacting our quality of life and placemaking in every single council district. Equity considerations. So every NADB property has a story. For some, the story is the owner is unresponsive, irresponsible, out of state, and just looking at the current fine structure as the cost of doing business, and just taking advantage of the system. But other stories reflect legitimate equity barriers. So we had a District 3 resident that was a grandmother and a senior citizen and didn't have the resources, the funding, or the physical ability to continuously board up her property and prevent people from breaking in. In the story of this photo, the owner was formerly incarcerated and was unable to maintain their property when they were incarcerated. And they had the best chance of housing with this property right here. So this highlights the importance of the Office of Social Equity and Innovation, OSEI, Human Rights and Community Partnerships, HRCP, and the Department of Housing Stability, HOST, in the NADB Task Force. HRCP currently holds contracts with Brothers Redevelopment and Dura to help residents experiencing financial hardships maintaining their property or with demolition. So we wanted to ensure this ordinance includes an equity lens to protect generational wealth building and prevent displacement. And a little later, we'll talk about how we updated the NADB process and added a reporting requirement to increase equity and support.
So we have a number of proposed legislative changes that we'll be going over in this presentation, including new definitions, clarified processes for remedial plans and appeals hearings, some stronger enforcement tools, including vacant lots in the ordinance and requiring reporting. So this flowchart kind of gives an overview of the process that we're proposing with these changes. So when a building is inspected by CPD and declared neglected and derelict, an initial order is issued. And so what's new here is that that order is to attend a remedial plan assessment meeting. And we hope that the outcome of having the meeting on the front end of the process is to address some of those equity barriers that Ayn talked about, and also just hopefully increase communication and collaboration with property owners. So that opens up the opportunity for CPD to do so with the property owners. The timeline for much of the things that you see here will be set by rules and regulations. So remedial plans will now also have one of two options, submitted by the owner and approved by CPD, or issued by CPD. And the remedial plan, if it is issued by CPD, can be appealed by the property owner. The new citation structure, CPD can issue an administrative citation of up to $5,000 of a violation of an order. So that could mean, you know, a property owner, after multiple attempts to get in contact with them, did not attend the remedial plan assessment meeting, or perhaps they violated the remedial plan. and those administrative citations may also be appealed. Any unpaid penalties can result in criminal prosecution, lien on the property, distraint warrants, or receivership.
Yeah, so as Masha said, we're going to be increasing the fine structure and clarifying the process for enforcement. So under the existing ordinance right now, CPD can levy a $999 per day fine fee. We will be upping that from $999 to up to $5,000 per day. And then in the existing ordinance, it doesn't link back to all the appeals processes that are already set up. So the new proposed legislation will link to Chapter 12 for appeals for to the remedial plan, and then it'll link to Chapter 2 for appeals to administrative citations. And then we're also clarifying the process for enforcement so the city can go to district court to get a preliminary injunction to stop people from violating the properties. And then we're expanding the definition and criteria. So right now there's six criteria to get on the list. Building is unsafe as defined by the building code. Not lawfully occupied for any three consecutive months, is wholly or partially boarded up, or doesn't show any evidence of legal, substantial, and ongoing construction activity. The third being not lawfully occupied and been in violation of any provision of city or state law on three separate occasions within a two-year period. And then we're adding this vacant land language. So properties that don't have structures on them but are vacant, like have a hole in the ground or whatever, after a demolished building is gone, that will also now be able to be designated neglected and derelict. And then also stronger enforcement tools. So as we said, the manager of CPD can declare a property neglected and derelict for all those reasons we just said. And then they can also initiate emergency abatements. So if needed, CPD could put up fencing, establish security measures, put up no trespassing signs, et cetera. And then in the ordinance, CPD has to notify the property owner that they did that within 48 hours of them doing it. We're also establishing a service response fee. So a service response is defined as a call for emergency service from fire department, police department, or for emergency medical services, usually from Denver Health, to a property. You would be considered in violation of the remedial plan if that happens more than three times within 6 months. So the penalty for that would be up to $5,000 of a fee. And then as Masha said, we're changing the remedial plan process. So we're now establishing an assessment meeting at the beginning. So after the order goes in, or after the property owner receives an order, they have to meet with CPD within 60 days to have that meeting. And this is really great because it allows CPD to create a remedial plan specific to that property. We know all of these properties have really unique circumstances. So this will empower the property owner and allow CPD to have better enforcement. And then those plans obviously can include detailed requirements and security measures, and then non-compliance will trigger citations and possible court enforcement. And then we're updating the appeals and hearings. Like we said, there won't be a show cause hearing in this new proposed ordinance, and that is replaced by that remedial plan assessment meeting at the beginning. And what we found under the existing process is that show cause hearings really bog down the process and extend that timeline. So by doing that remedial plan assessment meeting at the beginning, we're going to hopefully be able to bring these properties into compliance much quicker.
All right, so the picture that you see here is of a vacant parcel in District 3, and it was actually a neglected and derelict building that was demolished, so it came off of the, it was remediated, essentially, but it is still clearly neglected land. So as Ayn has shared with us, Councilman Member Torres's office receives many calls regarding this particular vacant parcel and the public health and safety hazards there. The current ordinance, as it is written, does not allow for elevated enforcement methods of vacant land, such as requirement for security or for a remedial plan on vacant land. So we wanted to make sure to include that in these changes. And so vacant land is now included in the definitions and criteria. And owners of vacant land that is neglected and derelict need to submit a remedial plan, or CPD can issue that remedial plan. The remedial plan requires abatement of all violations, and the property must also remain in compliance of all codes for at least 6 months after abatement. The service response fee also applies to vacant land, and CPD can require immediate security of the land if deemed necessary. And just wanted to highlight also the image at the top of this page. This is the Colfax Mansion at 1600 East Colfax Avenue, and it's a historic property, or was. In 2018, there was strong community support to save the building, including opportunities for funding to help offset rehabilitation costs, but the owner failed to secure and maintain the property. It was added to the neglected and derelict building list in 2020, and in March of 2024, the neglect culminated in a fire. It severely damaged the structure, and there was an approval of demolition by the Landmark Preservation Commission at the end of last year. So we had conversations with Historic Denver that helped lead us to what we are proposing today. With historic properties in mind, we're proposing new language in the ordinance that empowers Landmark Preservation Commission to preserve historic properties that are designated neglected and derelict. Again, with requiring that meeting with the property owner on the front end of the process, hopefully there can be more compliance with historic buildings in mind and collaboration with owners so they don't get to the form of neglect that could lead to a tragedy like this. An emergency abatement of historic properties is also allowed under our proposed new language, but CPD must give the Landmark Preservation Commission notice prior to the abatement.
So reporting and rulemaking, the ordinance has a new requirement of reporting to City Council from CPD on March 31st of each year based on the previous year's penalties. And the purpose of this is to increase transparency and inform council discussions around the upcoming year's budget. So that could look like, does there need to be additional staffing and resources? Do those contracts with Brothers Redevelopment and Dura need more funding? And also, how do we support the newly formed task force by identifying equity issues and providing data? So while all these fines and penalties go into the general fund, this is a good thing because we have the potential to look at other agencies that are supporting the NADB space that may need the funding as well. However, the elephant in the room is the $250 million budget deficit we're looking at in 2025 and 2026, as well as a citywide hiring freeze, 2026 budget reductions, potential layoffs, and CPD is also undergoing a change of leadership. So there is a collective level of anxiety in the room that shouldn't be overlooked, and we need to have flexibility with CPD on implementation. Because CPD estimates that by adopting this ordinance, 30% increase in administrative citations, so that's 1,200 administrative citations, new demand on admin, operations, accounting, and neighborhood inspections, increased demand for hearing officer time, and potentially 1 to 2 new full-time employees, as well as a $390,000 technology services fund for Excella updates. That said, our hope is that the increased fine structure means an increased funding to the general fund. So that's a big pill to swallow. As we're at the finish line of this ordinance, as we've gone over redone and rewritten draft over draft to get to a point where CPD, our council members, and our city attorney's office are all feeling really good with the place we're at with the ordinance. But implementation takes time, resources, and staff. And since we started our beginning journey in NADB, we've always advocated for CPD to have more staff, more funding, more agency to really improve the NADB landscape, but now the landscape has changed. So before we understood the state of the city's budget, CPD requested an effective date of February 1st, 2026 to implement this ordinance. But we met with the Department of Finance, the Mayor's Office, and council members to level set on how to move this ordinance forward and provide as much flexibility and care to CPD as our budget conversations evolve. So for now, we're keeping the effective date as is, but our council members are committed to amending the effective date if CPD needs more time as we head into the unknowns of the budget season. We need flexibility and collaboration in this implementation, and we want CPD to feel supported, not the pressures of the upcoming budget season. So because we are facing a budget crisis, but we still need to invest in Denver, and we all see this ordinance as an investment in public health and safety, an investment of housing and businesses, an investment in generational wealth, and most of all, an investment in the quality of life for all our Denver residents.
And then lastly, just want to go over the timeline one more time. You'll remember in July of last year, we were sitting around this table at Budget and Policy. We presented our initial ideas. We came back to Budget and Policy in March of this year to present a more nailed down version of what we had. We did council briefings on this language that we've got over the last few weeks. We're sitting here at Lutie right now. And then we expect to be at Mayor Council on June 17th, first reading on June 30th, and then second reading is expected to be at council on July 14th. So that's all we've got for the slides, but I do want to take the time to thank Committee Planning and Development. You guys have been incredible. Evelyn Baker, Tina Axelrad, Shay Scott, James Six, you guys are amazing. The mayor's office, Victoria and Angela were great. And Emily, oh my gosh, from the Department of Safety, you're incredible. I wasn't done yet. And then the
there's a long list.
Yeah, and then
there's a long list.
Violet and Angela are great, so.
And I think most of all, we do want to thank our council members for entrusting us with this policy and letting us lead. It's been a wild ride and it's still ongoing, but thank you so much for entrusting us with this policy.
You guys did an amazing job. We're so proud of you.
Yeah, I feel like they're probably pretty grateful to you all.
Just a guess.
Well, thank you all so much for the continued presentation, revisions, and being so very clear on the opportunity and the outcomes. I know you're not my aides, and I am extremely proud of what you brought forward and the impact it's going to have in a fine District 9. I was curious from the council sponsors, First Cashman, Councilmember Torres, and Councilmember Sawyer, if you had any additional comments, thoughts you want to add before we go into public comment.
Yeah, great job, great presentation. The evolution of this from when we first started, not just the ordinance itself, but the way the city, led by CPD, has just transformed the way they keep track of and enforce neglected and abandoned derelict buildings, has just transformed all by itself. That while recognizing, as Ian was saying, the need to be aware, as with everything we're doing in the city, but what budget impacts might be. For me, I think it's essential we move forward with this. It's kind of like people who drive on our roadways don't always pay attention to the speed limits. And we don't have police everywhere to enforce that, but we don't decide to, well, let's get rid of the ordinance. The ordinance is in place because when we do need to enforce it, we're able to. So as was presented by the team, we look forward to being reasonable and continuing to cooperate with the agencies moving forward. But I'm really excited to be at this point because these in my district, I mean, the way it started for us, Bank on East Evans Avenue was a nightmare for 5 or 6 years. So, you know, we said, we need to do something about this. So we start to work, and Mosh comes back and says, you know what, I think Sawyer's office is working on this. And then it's Councilman Torres' office is working on this. Yeah, it's and awesome. Fine District 9 and all around the city is all involved. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Councilmember Cashman. Councilwoman Torres?
Oh, sure. You know, for District 3, this presents a real quality of life issue for us. And I can't imagine any council person doesn't get a call or a complaint about an abandoned or a neglected property in your district. And we can spend a lot of resources sending our police officers out to do welfare checks, sending the fire department out to do responses to fires that might exist in some of those abandoned buildings. And frankly, these are properties that we all want to see better activation of. Some of the ones on the list are commercial. And already with this process, I'm seeing one of those properties become an activated business space because we have been more involved in holding those property owners accountable to initially even operating a junkyard without a license, to having to clean up that property, to now being asked to activate it and incentivized to activate it. So even the work that we've been able to do over a year in shining a light on this has been really valuable. Sometimes things have to get messier and harder in order to get better. And adding more properties to the NADB list was hard to see, right? It probably doubled, if not more, in the time that we've been doing this. But these were properties that were not being paid attention to by the city. They were constantly observed by our residents. And so it's important for us to be able to get those properties on the list so that we can effectively manage them and deal with them. So just really proud of the work that these three did. Thank you all so much. You did excellent work. And just great working with our colleagues and our city departments. I think you've all been really excellent. And we ended up having just a lot of bridge building between departments that was just hard to do, I think, before. And so just appreciate that and appreciate your partnership in this. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilwoman Torres. Councilwoman Sawyer.
Yeah, thanks. Well, again, you guys did an amazing job. So proud of you. Thank you very much. And all, a number of city agencies and community partners worked with us on this. And, you know, I think this is one of those really special things that comes through every so often that is, it feels small because we're just looking at language, right, and talking about a bunch of different changes, but the impact that it will have on our neighborhoods is significant. I was just saying to someone today, you know, from a 30,000 foot view, what we hear from our residents is concerns about crime, concerns about, right, but we know crime is going down significantly in Denver. And so what we're looking at here is really the perception of crime. There are crimes that are happening on a lot of these NADB properties, but the perception of crime, right? That feeling when you walk down the street in your neighborhood that you're not safe because of the built environment around you that is falling apart or doesn't look safe and doesn't feel safe. And that has an impact on the quality of life of our neighborhoods and our residents. And so really excited to be able to work with the city agencies to identify that and to come up with a solution to it that is going to take some work on the part of CPD and that they will need additional staff for and dollars for. But yet is worth that investment because of the change that our residents will see in their neighborhoods. So really excited about this. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Councilwoman Sawyer, and love to welcome Council President Sandoval to the meeting. Thank you for attending. We have a public comment on this proposal, and before we even go there, I wanted to thank the folks in the neglected and derelict properties, to the gentlemen in the audience who have been doing amazing work across the city. So I would be remiss if we didn't take a moment to thank you. We have four individuals, one, two, three, five individuals here to speak. In person, we have John Deffenbaugh. Each of our speakers, we have 2 minutes. The amazing Ann Wallace, sitting here to my right, will time your 2 minutes. I'll let you know when your time is up. If you're in the audience, please come up to the mic, introduce yourself, any organization you're a part of, and your 2 minutes will begin. So we'll start first with you, John.
I have never spoken in this room. This is very exciting. First of all, just to say how cool it is to have been part of this process. Thanks to the amazing three. You've been fantastic. Did an amazing presentation to Historic Denver's Preservation and Policy Committee. We're fully supportive of this. Also appreciating the interagency and inter-team collaboration is so great to see as well, because really that is what is going to make a tangible difference in the future. The current ordinance just does not work. It is the cost of doing business. We're seeing from experiences, and thank you for showing Colfax. I'm not going to talk about it too much because I'll start turn bright red. But this could hopefully prevent that from occurring in the future. Increasing fines, increasing enforcement, having dedicated individuals to hold landowners to account. We all want to achieve compromise consensus. We all want to get along with each other. But sometimes that just does not happen. And we need a tool to hold errant property owners to account. And this feels so much stronger than what we have just now. Just on the budget crisis, we're all aware of it. What I would say is that buildings are assets. They generate property taxes. Commercial properties generate economic activity that has far wider economic benefits than the fines, which I hope will be generated by this. So I really hope that this is enforced to all its strength as quickly as possible. And just thanks to everybody for being part of it. And thank you to you three.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. We're going virtual to Hillary Porter. And Tim, if you are able to promote the three individuals that are virtual, and if Hillary is available, Hillary, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you very much. My name is Hillary Portell, and I'm the executive director of the Colfax Mayfair.
Wait, hang on. Hillary, hold on just 1 second. We can't hear you very well. Producer, is there a way to turn that up, please? Thank you. Sorry, Hillary.
Good catch, Councilwoman.
Try again.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes,
please continue.
Okay. My name is Hillary Portell. I'm the executive director of the Colfax Mayfair Business Improvement District and have been for the last 10 years. We represent commercial property owners and businesses on Colfax Avenue between Eudora Street and Monaco and inclusive of the Mayfair Town Center. I'm speaking in favor of the proposed ordinance changes today. I actually believe they will support sales and property tax revenue in the city for a number of reasons. We have had 7 extreme examples of neglected and derelict buildings in our district over the years that required sustained effort over months or years. There have been others we just didn't have time to pursue. 2 buildings are on the city's current list right now, and we're focusing on 2 additional situations as we speak. There will likely be others due to local and national economic conditions affecting all of us. Neglected and derelict buildings pose a number of problems. We've had open drug use, prostitution, fires, camping, criminal activity, menacing behavior, visible mold, rotting trash, et cetera, et cetera. These things not only threaten nearby communities and their quality of life, they deter customer activity and property values in the vicinity, thereby suppressing sales tax and property tax revenue, not just with that building, but all of them, all the buildings around it. While a great many local owners are responsive, many are not. They live out of state, they have corporate interests, they have group ownership, but they can't afford repairs or they're unable to comply with requirements.
And Hillary, thank you so much for your comments. Your time is up. And I mispronounced your name, even though I've known you forever. It's Portell instead of Porter. But thank you so much for your comments. Tony Frey.
Hi, how are you? Start my video.
And we can hear you, Tony. The floor is yours. Yeah,
perfect. My name is Tony Fry. I am the safety committee lead of the West Colfax Association of Neighbors, the West Colfax RNO, and we are supporting the proposed changes. We took it to a vote, and everyone unanimously in the committee voted to provide a letter, which we sent over to Councilwoman Torres. But this issue, it's not just a quality of life issue, it's a safety issue, and it's definitely a burden to our city resources. And the level of remediation, the incentive today for select property owners to meet the standards written into the NADB ordinance is not great enough, nor is the scope broad enough to meet the results that this ordinance intends for. So I can give you some examples. There are 2 different lots in our neighborhood in West Colfax. I hear from the neighbors in the immediate vicinity all the time about vagrancy, drugs, aggressive behavior that someone experienced directly in one of these properties on an empty lot. Another instance was an individual who has a parcel of property that happens to be right next to me, who I've been in touch with for the last few years to try to fix up the property, who she's left unkept, unsecured, unoccupied for the entire 3.5 years that I've lived where I have. Tracking a massive amount of nuisance and drugs and all sorts of things to the extent that eventually a fire was lit on her property, 1 parcel away from mine. So I'm very passionate about this issue, and I'm grateful that the city is looking into this and that you guys are looking to increase the accountability required of our property owners in our communities. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tony. We have next virtually David Pardo. David is present, please get accept the promotion. We'll give you just a few seconds. And producer, let us know if David has is online. All right, we'll go to in person. Jean or Jenny Granville?
Jean.
Jean, please, thank you. Come up to the mic, introduce yourself, and you have 2 minutes.
All right.
Hi, my name is Jean Granville. I'm president of the Sun Valley Community Coalition, which is a registered neighborhood organization. And I want to thank council members Torres, Cashman, and Sawyer, and the working group, and the amazing three, I guess, for all the work that you did. You know, I guess you hear a lot from us in the neighborhoods. We're all working so hard, you know, to advance, to both preserve and advance the quality of life, particularly on the west side. And if there's ever anything, just echoing Councilwoman Sawyer, if there's anything that really feels like total disinvestment, you know, not to mention, you know, potential safety issues, including loss of life that we have encountered in Sun Valley, it's really abandoned and neglected buildings. So we're really supportive of this whole effort, and particularly having this remedial plan up front to sort out the equity issues so that the folks that really do need some help to, you know, to maintain their property get it, and the folks that are just really ignoring because they're speculators and don't, you know, even, they're not even living here, you know, have some accountability. And I think what we're hoping is that it also will encourage, by having some pretty steep fines, these property owners to be more in partnership with the community itself. I mean, it's the neighbors making the phone call. The neighbors could easily call, you know, the property owner and say, hey, somebody's breaking in. Hey, there's been some activity. Hey, the weeds need to be cut, and avoid some of these phone calls. But we don't have any recourse except to make these big phone calls and make it a big issue. So we're hoping, you know, when we have had property owners like that, you know, we have avoided it. We've been on top of it. We've helped them. We've gone and cleaned up their yards.
Thank you so much for your compassion.
Thank
you for being here. Your time is up. We're looking around the room. We do have some council members in queue. There are no other public comments from folks in the audience. I just want to do one quick look at the audience. I know we do have time for if anyone wanted to sign up but was not able to, I'll provide an opportunity for you to speak at this time. Going once, going twice, seeing none. We have a queue of council members signed up. So Councilmember Hines, and then Council President Pro Tem Romero Campbell.
Thank you, Committee Chair. Thank you to the sponsors. Thank you so much for your hard work as well. Three Musketeers. y'all get to decide who gets what name, I suppose.
Three stages.
Yeah. Yes. The terrible threesome.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for highlighting District 10. We had multiple District 10 photos. I was surprised to see that we weren't in the top 4 or 5. That's
not a list you want to be at the top
of. So a bit surprised, honestly, because of the, you know, maybe the ones that are in District 10 just happen to be more notorious, as in like newsworthy. So the structure that was on fire, that was that's in District 10. The car wash next to the 7-Eleven, also in District 10. Actually, they're just a few blocks from one another. Mm-hmm. And so we have a lot of opportunity for additional visibility.
Number five.
You did the top four.
I did the top
because you were omitting the perfect district.
I just wanted to make you feel a little better.
Thank you. So one of the things, you know, just because we have experience in District 10 with some of these buildings, there's a 48-hour requirement to notify the property owner, I think, if I remember correctly. I know we struggled for months trying to find anyone who would listen for the Burger King that was on Colfax, that they just left, and Burger King corporate had no, like, we would reach out and not get a response from anyone. So how does that, I don't want the city to be on the hook for a 48-hour mandate when we just, as we heard in public comment, we can't find the property owner either.
Come on down.
And thank you so much for introducing yourself.
Yes, I'm Shay Scott. I'm the manager of zoning and neighborhood inspections for CPD. I believe that that part of the ordinance is saying that we have to notify the owners. So essentially, we're posting, giving proper service, sending by mail, not necessarily that we have to get in contact with them within that 40 hours, but we are giving proper service and notification that we have taken that action.
Great correction. We notify them. They don't necessarily have to hear it in 48 hours, but we're doing what we're doing by placarding or sending a letter or both or all of the above. Okay.
That's great.
Great. Also, are there, I was having a conversation just earlier today about how the city gives out lots of warnings and snow shoveling. There are property owners that every year they get warning after warning after warning about shoveling from neighborhood inspections, and we never actually issue them any citations. Given the public awareness of some of these buildings, given they catch fire, given they have people living in uninhabitable situations because they're occupying these places, how many warnings do we offer before we require the show cause hearing? We've eliminated the show cause hearing, the remediation plan hearing.
So we're going to do some work to operationalize the ordinance. And part of that is figuring out, you know, how we best communicate people on that front end. So we're giving them time to give us a remedial plan. If they don't do that, or they miss the scheduled meeting with us, then we're going to go straight to citation. So it'll be very clear as we give notices that that's the next step. And we will also take into account on those citations, it's up to 5,000. So we're going to take in the circumstances of the property owner and what's going on with them. But we are committed to giving citations. And just in our normal process of warnings, that tracking mechanism, as you mentioned, snow year over year, wasn't really there. And part of the work that we've done with the council aides and with the other departments in the city is to beef up our tracking. So we did make some Acela upgrades. That's the tracking software that we use for neglect and derelict buildings. And we'll be making some more upgrades based on the ordinance changes to be able to give citations. So we will have the mechanisms to track and to hold people accountable.
Great. Just as from a value standpoint, I totally agree that Denver should start with compassion. I think that sometimes the city errs so heavily on the side of compassion that some people, it's the right thing that they get warned, but eventually there are some people who will take those warnings all day and not do anything until we start the carrot and the stick. We've got to use the stick sometimes.
So we have also developed our management fee adjustment committee. So there is now a more fleshed out process for owners after they receive fines to be able to come to CPD and request some alleviation of those fines based on some criteria of what are their circumstances, what was blocking them from coming into compliance. So that's another outcome of all the work that's been done where, you know, people will have a mechanism after the fact. So giving that citation gets you to the table. And hopefully after, if we need to reevaluate those fees, we will have that opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. So two comments. These are fines. Some of these are expensive fines. We get so many 911, 311 complaints about NADB structures. We've seen sometimes they catch fire. Sometimes people inhabit them even though they're uninhabitable, and we've got a rental registry because we want to make sure the people of Denver live in habitable situations, inhabit habitable situations. Sometimes these make the news too, like the structure was on fire. And we otherwise get so much angst from neighbors and city employees. And so I recognize that these could be big fines for people, but if we start with compassion, just given how much negative reaction that we have and negative interaction, is important that the city has a tool to provide oversights to these structures, particularly when the property owners choose not to provide that oversight on their own. Last thing, Mr. Bringer.
Uh-oh.
How long have you been with the city?
3 years.
What is it on the 13th?
Friday the 13th.
So, how fortuitous that we will have the opportunity to recognize you on the record for your 3-year anniversary. We don't really get to do
thank
that
you,
often.
Councilman,
with,
I appreciate that.
Meetings, but yeah, thank you for your thank service
you.
To our city.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Hines and Council President Pro Tem.
Thank you. I just have a comment. Thank you for the presentation and the briefing and going through, I think, some of the changes and the nuances that have been put in there around equity and some of the timelines to be able to look at neglected and derelict buildings, I think is a great improvement. I'm glad that we don't have, you know, we're not the top of the list on in District 4. However, you're going to tell me, I know. But I just appreciate it because it is. One is one too many, right? And so I think that that's quality of life that people are experiencing and having this mechanism to be able to go through. I was just talking to Tina earlier about it outside on this lovely day. But I just wanted to thank you for the work that you all have done on this proposal and ordinance. I do think it needs to move forward and not be delayed by what we are perceiving as a budget constraint, and really think about how we move this forward, because I do feel like this is such a highly visible issue that we are all facing in all of our districts across the city. In District 4, we have a lot of commercial buildings, and that's where we see it the most. We do have, you know, homes within neighborhoods. You know, you can kind of point them out as to where they are. But a lot of ours are on strip malls, a lot of buildings. To your point, there are a lot of owners of the properties that do not live here in state. And they don't care what's happening on the corner. They don't care that it's a vacant Arby's on Hampton and Yosemite, you know, and it's trying to be able to go through and navigate and find and to be able to address those. I really appreciate it. So that was all I wanted to say, but thank you very much.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Your District 4 is 9 on the list.
There you go. Good number.
Fine number.
Fine nine. I wanted to say first, once again, to the team and to the council sponsors, you know, thank you so much for this good work. I so appreciated your initial comments on the equity piece. And elevating just that thoughtfulness is helpful for community members I know watching this who may be facing some of those things that may have caused their buildings, their homes, or whatever, to be neglected, and this may cause some consternation for them. It is. I thought it was great that you elevated that early in this presentation, and it's just something that you guys have been thinking about. That you as a team, have been thoughtful about. I wanted to say to James Hicks and to Shay Scott, we have over the last year and a half been walking Welton Street corridor. That's where a lot of our neglected and derelict buildings are. For many decades, those buildings were thriving African-American owned properties on that corridor, and now they're not. I really appreciate, once again, from James and from Shay, the sensitivity in the process that you've led with my aide, Darius Shelby. Our walk and talks with community members, our constant outreaches. We have almost monthly have been in touch with your team. We've brought you down to walk the corridor, even though it's only 2 of you and you have an entire city. You've been committed to doing that in D9 because you know the impact to families that want to stay on the Welton corridor and then we need a little bit more support. I think this is a fantastic response to what is necessary, but I also think the sensitivity and the awareness of the equity piece is so essential, and I appreciate everyone's thoughtfulness in this. This is an action item. We'll need a motion and a second, and then a vote. So, I see Councilmember Parity's hands, and I will do a second from Councilmember Hines. All those, well, we don't have to do all those in favor. Do we have a thumbs up for I've seen all thumbs up. We're excited to move this to the floor. Thank you so much to Amazing Three for your presentation and for really taking such good care of this specific bill and ordinance. We have, let me go back to my script, two consent items, and seeing none being pulled off, I wanted to welcome Alyssa to her first Ludi meeting. Congratulations, you survived the Ludi meeting, Alyssa. Thank you for joining our team. And with that, thank everyone for being here, and that's the end of our meeting.